This is KPCW 806 on this Tuesday, June 11th, 60 degrees, currently here in Old Town Park City. And matching that is Heber City under mostly sunny skies. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, boy, 60 degrees, that's a far cry from the 44-degree average overnight low that we typically see. So certainly filling the above-average temperature trend with south flow that's been in place. High pressure is going to continue to dominate the weather pattern for your Tuesday. So highs about 10 degrees above normal into the afternoon with sunshine continuing. So that puts Park City at about 81 degrees for the high on this Tuesday. Heber should be 88 for the high. We'll continue to warm up with the high pressure that's just to the south of us continuing to surge northward, so that'll keep warmer temperatures flowing into the state. Should see temperatures climb to the upper 80s on Wednesday with mostly sunny skies. Overnight lows in the mid-50s. And we'll continue to see those mild overnight lows with mid-50s again Wednesday night to Thursday. Temperatures near 86 with some changes moving in on Friday. They'll be fairly subtle. Temperatures will still be above average, but will drop to about 80 degrees. For Park City, we will see partly cloudy skies, and there's maybe a 10% chance we could see a shower or thunderstorm as well. The trough of low pressure that's expected to lift north through the state that's been hanging out just to the southwest of us might steer clear of us and push further east, and so we might just see some of the impacts with cloud cover, but very little moisture content it's looking like at this point. So overnight lows again in the mid-50s. Friday night and Saturday should have slightly cooler weather over the weekend, mid to upper 70s with mostly sunny skies. Could see a little bit more moisture on Monday next week. Temperatures dropping to average highs, which is 71 on Monday for Park City, partly cloudy. Heber looking at mid-90s to low 90s on Wednesday and Thursday. So hottest temperatures of the next seven will be tomorrow and on Thursday. We fall into the mid-80s on Friday and Saturday and should hang out in those low 80s and upper 70s early next week. Again, a slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm Friday afternoon and evening. Otherwise, dry weather will stick around across the Wasatch back for the most part over the next 7 days.
Okay, Nate, thank you.
My pleasure.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott, discussing the agenda for Wednesday's county council meeting. And the board of directors co-chair of the Christian Center of Park City, Rob Harder, will be introducing us to the group's new executive, Steve Richardson, who moves to town later this year. All of that coming up again on the local news hour this hour. Taking a look at some local news now, a portion of Teton Pass collapsed in a landslide Saturday, cutting off access from eastern Idaho to Jackson, Wyoming. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the pass will be closed for weeks.
The Wyoming Department of Transportation says it discovered the collapse on State Route 22 around 5 a.m. Saturday. No one was harmed. Teton Pass is a key road for workers to access Jackson and Grand Teton National Park from Idaho. Former Park City Planning Commissioner Chris Larson, who now lives in Victor, Idaho, explains.
Teton Pass is a lifeline between two communities, Jackson and Teton Valley, and we're codependent on each other. Jackson is where most of the jobs are, and Teton Valley is where most of the housing is.
A 30 to 45 minute commute just became at least 2 hours, says Teton County Wyoming Commissioner Luther Probst. Workers will need to drive 50 miles south to Alpine Junction to U.S. Highway 89, which heads north to Jackson. U.S. 89 is also the most direct route for Utah travelers headed to the area.
There's no definitive timeline, but they are moving to fix it to get at least one-way traffic open in the next few weeks.
The massive hole is around mile marker 13, and YDOT engineers estimate it's about 300 feet end-to-end. They are evaluating the stability of the surrounding area. The cause is currently under investigation, though Luther notes it's likely connected to snowmelt and summer runoff. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council meets in work session Wednesday, starting about 2:30 in the studio with a meeting preview. I have Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see. The council will get an update on the Community Renewable Energy Agency. Like Park City, Summit County also made a goal to basically become 100% net renewable energy free for the county operations and residents by the year 2030. So how are we doing here?
Well, we're doing well as far as 2030 goes. We've had some hiccups there with what we call CREA, The report tomorrow is mostly about some of those hiccups. There's pros and positives and negatives to that. Rocky Mountain Power has done away from their all-source, what's called their all-source RFP. They were going out to bring in renewable sources for their own power needs, and that would have met our needs as far as CREA goes. So they've kind of backed off of that, so we're going to have to go out as an agency and procure our own renewable resources. But we can do that. It's just going to take us a little bit more time than we thought. But this is also an opportunity for other cities and counties to jump in. We are 18 counties and cities in Utah that have joined CREA, and we have the opportunity to add more through this process if we can this summer.
So what's happening with CREA? I mean, is it dissolving or going away, or is it just no partnership with Rocky Mountain?
It's still a good partnership with Rocky Mountain. It's just different. Rocky Mountain Power has chosen to back off some of their renewables just because of the, for example, that you saw the legislature this year took on that Intermountain Power plant in Delta, and they're continuing to use coal longer than probably we as a county would appreciate. And since they have done that, they've backed off from their other sources. So they're taking advantage of the financial opportunities to provide lower cost power to their customers in the states in which they serve. So this has had an effect on us, just slowing us down. But they're still dedicated to work with us as partners, and we are dedicated to continue to provide solar, wind, and geothermal to our community.
All right. So it sounds like a stockholder decision then, as opposed to just.
I believe that's the case.
Yeah. So what were they going to provide for the 18 cities and counties?
They were just going to be the one that put out the RFP. So they're going to bring that in and then say, here's the power you need for your to be 100% renewable in your communities. Instead of doing that, they're saying, we're not going to go out to RFP. You're going to have to do that yourselves, but we'll work with you on as you procure that. For example, the Electron project, we went out to Tooele, we got some wind or some solar. We might have to do that ourselves, and that will be part of Rocky Mountain Power's resources, but then they'll sell that to us, and we can provide this to our customers who choose to participate in that program.
Okay, so Rocky Mountain Power is going to continue to use coal because they think it's better for ratepayers.
And then that
does not allow you, because they're doing that, allow you to get to that 100% net.
It's just going to take us more time. They're going to force us to go through that process outside of them. And in their defense, they've received some very inexpensive solar power out of California as well. So that's part of their portfolio, which has probably made it less advantageous for them to go out to this RFP for us.
Yeah. So are there other places Summit County can go, though, to get the renewable energy that it's looking for?
Well, I think solar is coming online all the time in various locations, and I think we'll just need to be part of that project. And what's really been a challenge is, because Rocky Mountain Power was going to go do this for us, we've had to do this internally, so we've had to write the RFP. This has caused Emily Quinton and our sustainability team a great deal of work and effort. So it's just really slowed things down. But we're going to land in the same place. And of course, 2030 we're going to meet that goal and exceed that goal by years.
So is that Tooele Solar Farm up and operating?
I believe it is. It was, I think, June. In fact, that was one of going to be my questions tomorrow. Where are we on the Electron? And I believe that is operational and providing power to us.
Okay. And then when you say that more cities and counties are able now to be part of this, actually, I didn't realize it was so many. I thought it was just Park City, Summit County, and Salt Lake County.
Right. There's 18, I think Moab's part of that, Grand County. I think that we had closed that off. I think CREA had been established and set, and because we're going out to this new internal RFP, we're able to allow more communities to join if they want. I don't know if any of them will, but there was a process laid out for that for this summer.
All right. Lake Rockport Estates. This was originally developed as a summer community back in the early 1970s. It's asking to be either annexed into Mountain Regional or to become a wholesale customers. So my understanding that this is a community that has to currently haul in its own water every winter.
Yeah, it's a real challenge with a lot of hurdles. This is an agenda item where Andy and Mountain Regional is coming to the council and saying, what do you want to do here? Is there anything we want to do here? It was never intended to be a year-round community when it was first established. The way that the infrastructure was put in was not done to a municipal standard. They would need 100% approval from their residents and landowners to join Mountain Regional. This would be as far east as Mountain Regional has ever provided water. So there's a lot of hurdles. I'm probably not super optimistic about this. Getting 100% of anybody to do anything is almost impossible. So it'll be an interesting discussion. I'm sure we have some council members that are very interested in this. Based on what they've heard from residents, so I'll bet there'll be some great questions here.
So Lake Rockport Estates, just so we let people know, it's up on the hill, basically west of, across the highway and west of the reservoir itself.
Right, just west of 32.
Yeah. So they do have water transmission lines, but just not buried to prevent freezing. Is that the problem?
Yes, they're probably not buried to a depth that would be appropriate. I heard some of them are buried less than a foot, so...
And then they have one working well, but this isn't enough to supply the entire 328-lot subdivision.
That's right.
Are all those lots built on, or?
No, I think I don't know how many are and how many are not, but I think there's a lot that are just ground still.
Yeah, so I guess they're a little bit afraid. I guess I would be as a resident there. The subdivision had obtained about a $3.5 million loan to drill a third well, but it only produced about 20 gallons a minute, far below what they need.
Yes.
So they've just backed off of that?
Yes, I think they have. I think they, and that's the thing with wells. Sometimes you do that with an educated guess, but sometimes you come up dry. It's just a really challenging situation. I don't know what the answer is, and you start with something. This happens a lot in the county with service areas, for example. We start a service area in some geographic location of the area, and it makes sense at the time. And then over time, other people move in, things change, and then we look to solutions, and sometimes we look to the county to help, and sometimes we can, and sometimes we can't. And this will be a real challenge for Mountain Regional Water.
So as the governing board of Mountain Regional Water District, it's the county council that has the final say on this?
Yes, I think they would have the final say.
All right, so what would Mountain Regional Water or the Summit County Council require before accepting them, annexing them into the system?
Well, I'd hope that they first of all, they need 100% of the residents to be on board, and in so doing, I would hope that they would ask them to bring their infrastructure up to the standard that Mountain Regional can work with. And that's going to cost them a lot of money. That would be an assessment to the homeowners. And that would be my opinion. Is we don't cause the rest of the taxpayers of Summit County to come in and contribute to just this one area, that we ask them to do that internally there as an HOA.
Yeah. Now, if they can't be annexed for one of the number of reasons we just listed, it is asking to become a wholesale water customer. So what would be required of that? I mean, and does Mountain Regional have the water to serve?
I think they do have the water. I think it would also be expensive. I think it's a pipe of a certain size, and it would have to be run to the east side of the mountain. But they're in a decent position to that, and that might be the answer. But those costs are going to be exorbitant, and I know that we've heard that. Please, you know, we need the help. Please help us. We've also heard that we don't want to pay for this. So,
All right. At 3:10, then a discussion about the construction traffic from the Tuhay development along 200 South. The issue here is that it spans both Summit and Wasatch County, and it sounds like, reading the staff report, that an agreement was never made. No action was taken. The action was tabled, and the developer just went ahead and did what he wanted. Is there reason here to stop construction until it gets figured out or an agreement signed?
Well, all the construction that I know of is taking place on the Wasatch County side, and so I don't think we have the jurisdiction or the responsibility to halt any construction. I think this is a result of residents in the area that have been concerned with construction traffic, with dust, with speeds, and they came to the council back in March and asked for some help. And I asked our staff to look at this from an engineering perspective, from a legal perspective. What are our options in either limiting traffic or eliminating traffic from this construction traffic? So this is a culmination of that staff report that you read that Mr. Kendall from our engineering office put together. He talks in there about limiting trucks by weight, by time of day. We've talked with you, there's in there talking about putting a crash gate in there. So it is a difficult situation where that traffic is mostly servicing Wasatch County and is not serving the residents of Summit County. People go to the gun club, and that's a way that we would access that. But would a crash gate make sense there, and would in essence stop that development and that operation from a construction perspective? There was a time when the developer's side had asked the county if they could pave that road on the county side and pay to maintain it. I don't know if that offer is still on the table, but in times past, the council has been reluctant to accept that offer because they didn't want more traffic, or they didn't want that to be maybe more justified as a construction access. So, but challenging situation. We're working well with Wasatch County. We let them know what's going on and how this discussion's going to go, and we're asking them to tune in and weigh in if they have the opportunity.
All right, so could you just like keep it a dirt road, but that you just put some kind of temporary speed bump so that you couldn't speed on it?
I think there's some things like that we can do. I think paving it and doing some of those speed bumps or narrowing might be would eliminate dust, but also slow down the traffic. But right now, what I'm hearing is that let's stop traffic on that altogether that goes into Wasatch County.
Do we have other projects like this, these kind of bike count, you know, that go through? I mean, Victory Ranch, I think, is maybe like that, or.
And I don't know. I don't think we've ever had a solution to something else that's been similar to this. And of course, these are public roads. We want to keep them open if we can. We want the public to be able to access throughout different counties, and don't want to put gates up along the borders of our organization. But this is a challenging one.
Yeah, perhaps even more concerning though is how things kind of just fell through the cracks here. What is the process in place for ensuring that issues like this are followed through on?
I think we just need to work better together as a county. I had a conversation with Dustin with Wasatch County about this very issue, and we committed together to work together as we entitle things on our borders to talk to each other. Of course, we've had other border skirmishes, and that hasn't necessarily been Wasatch County. It's been maybe more developer and community. We've seen this in other places, but I think we just need to coordinate better, and I think we're doing that better than we ever have. I think Wasatch County has grown such to a point where we're becoming kind of one. I think there was a long time Heber was quite removed from us, and now we hear them on KPCW, and they're more a part of our community than they ever have been.
All right, then at 4:10, the County Council will consider the six-month extension of the Healthy You Behavioral and Huntsman Mental Health Institute service contract. Why only 6 months? Because the current contract is like for 5 years.
Well, because we're still negotiating a long-term contract, and those negotiations are going very well, and we're hoping that this six-month extension will cover us. In fact, I think we're hoping to get a solution back to the council within the next 2 months. So hopefully we don't even need 6 months, but this should give us plenty of time to be able to negotiate whatever the transition looks like from what we're doing now to what we do in the next year.
Yeah, we talked about this kind of before. I mean, I think I used the example of ski passes. It was like, you know, they came in with their bid, wanting the business, offering a great deal, and then we see price creep. How much more are they asking for?
I think the number we heard, we budgeted $300,000 as part of our budget for FY24 for this. I think that they have shown numbers much larger than that as losses. We've then questioned how are billings going. We've tried to really get into some of those details to make sure that those losses are justified, and I think we've come to a nice middle ground to where we see the cost of this service, the service we want to provide to our community, is expensive. It's going to cost more than what we've been paying. But where is that middle ground, and how much can Huntsman as an organization come to the table and provide mental health services for our community at the lowest cost possible, and even in some situations just as a donation on their part too. So we're trying to come to that middle ground where I think we're very close.
So based on that $300,000 annual contract, that's about $25,000 a month. We're going to start paying them $50,000 a month for July, August, and September, and then go up to $75,000 for October, November, and December. So how much a month do they want?
Yeah. Well, yeah, $300,000 is probably not going to get it done. So that's the long and the short of it. We've looked at taking this in-house and providing mental health services as an organization without Huntsman. That would be extremely expensive as well. So we're hoping that we can look to them as the provider, look to them as the expert, and find some middle ground that's going to work for us. But we don't have numbers yet.
Okay, so $50,000 actually would be middle ground, right? And that would double that would be a $600,000 a year expenditure.
That would be middle ground between the number that they're looking at. But the numbers that they've showed us, too, are much larger than that.
What are the numbers are they showing you?
Well, I'm looking at the number that we talked about as an organization to provide this service ourselves. And depending on how much we can do with billings, that could be in the millions. So we're hoping that we can find some kind of middle ground, whether that's not right in the middle, but it's somewhere that we know that they're doing this for the best price they can do it. We're getting the best service we want to provide, and it's much better than what we could do internally as an organization.
Okay, so what are they proposing?
I actually haven't even been in those meetings myself. So we've sent two council members to serve as liaisons to the council. We've got Aaron Newman and Phil Bondurant, who've both been heavily involved in those negotiations. And honestly, that's what I've heard is that we're very close to some kind of a resolution.
Okay, and then where does that money come from?
General fund. We do hope we can increase billings. That's always something we look for, is increasing revenue, making sure we're getting all that we can. But as far as I know, that'll be general funds. We always have. Nobody does a better job than the health department of getting grants and looking to both the federal and state level for especially for mental health services, which is kind of a key issue in our community and in the nation, honestly, these days.
All right, and then at 4:40 there'll be a discussion on the transportation sales tax projects and small city grants approval request. I mean, what's the request here? I mean, it was a 123-page staff report.
In a nutshell, this is both the bond project, which is what we call it. It's $5.3 million, mostly to Summit County and Park City for some projects, and then $489,000, what we call the small cities grant. So this is the proposal that went to COG. It was unanimously recommended to go to the council. Council has final approval on spending this tax money. $489,000 to the small cities and around $5.3 million. Some of that, $5.3 for these projects, is money that has already been allocated that was not spent.
So the council just being asked to grant what the COG already approved.
Exactly right.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Maybe just that I was very grateful to be able to go to a city tour this year for my second time. It was exciting for me to be able to celebrate Miles and his tenure. I'm excited for Scott. I think he's going to do a wonderful job. I was grateful that my five members of the Summit County Council were able to attend city tour this year, where none were able to go last year. So that was really exciting for me, and we had a great time. Telluride, learned a lot.
Great. So, all right. Thanks, Shane.
Leslie, thank you. Have a great day.
That's Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Well, Park City Trails and Open Space Rangers say they became de facto wedding planners after closing the popular Church of Dirt venue in Bonanza Flat. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on that.
The Church of Dirt was high in the Wasatch Mountains, just a short walk from the parking lot at the busy Bonanza Flat trailhead. It's part of the Bonanza Flat Conservation Area, established after the city bought the land in 2017. A public space, the improvised church consisted of a makeshift arch made of old aspen tree branches and 10 wooden benches. Set in a field of sagebrush and scrub oak with a panoramic view of the mountains, the informal venue was built by Scott House and his wife for their wedding in 2012. After the ceremony, the rustic arch was left behind the property, which at the time was private land, and other nuptials followed. During the COVID-19 pandemic, when events were pushed outside, the makeshift venue exploded in popularity as social media influencers promoted the church as a free, secret wedding spot. However, the popularity of the church led to it being loved to death to overuse. Weddings at the location caused overloaded parking lots, blocked roads, trash, scheduling conflicts, and more. Last October, the Park City Council unanimously recommended the closure of the church. On Thursday, Trails and Open Space Park Ranger Billy Curick told the Park City Council the benches and rustic arch have been removed, and restoration signage was installed in their place.
We have a huge implementation plan this year with no parking signage to kind of help make that roadway parking even more clear and kind of reduce that enforcement burden.
Kirk said he and other park rangers also had to have some lengthy conversations with couples who had planned to wed at the Church of Dirt. Most couples were understanding.
We had some dialogues where we tried to help guide people into other venues that might give them a similar type of experience.
The team also returned many wedding date markers previously dotting the ground at the Church of Dirt. The Trails and Open Space team is planning on keeping an eye on the area this season to note any impacts. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Tickets now on sale for Deer Valley's Beer Festival. That's happening this fall, September 14th and 15th. The event celebrates Utah breweries and includes scenic chairlift access throughout the resort, outdoor dining, live music, and family-friendly activities. Attendees can sample beer flavors and styles from more than a dozen Utah breweries. Ticket packages range from $15 for non-drinkers to $135 for VIP access. You can see a link to purchase tickets available online at kpcw.org. And Midway's first Music on the Square concert of the season is happening today, featuring the band The Fuse. The free concert begins at 6 o'clock at Midway Town Square. The Tuesday night event is Bring Your Own Blanket. Well, a future Winter Games in Utah will likely cost about $3 billion. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports that taxpayers will not be funding the event.
The committee leading Salt Lake City's 2034 Winter Olympics bid released new documents Monday, providing a closer look at how organizers plan to put on the Games. Between personnel, venue infrastructure, and other expenses, operations for the Olympics are expected to cost over $2.8 billion. That's about the same as the 2002 Games adjusted for inflation. It's part of an overall $4 billion budget that includes revenue sharing with the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, sponsorships, ticket and hotel sales, and funding for sport and youth programs. No public taxpayer dollars will be used, according to Brett Hankins, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer for Utah's 2034 bid team.
Our ticket sales and hospitality target is $1.19 billion. This is a very big number. We will have quite a few more events and therefore tickets to sell versus 2002. And this number allows us to fund these games privately, if you will, without reliance on public funds.
Compared to the 2002 games in Salt Lake City, the 2034 Olympics will have 40% more events. Organizers don't plan to construct any new venues and will instead utilize locations maintained since 2002, such as the Utah Olympic Park and Soldier Hollow Nordic Center.
Yes, there will be some very high demand tickets that will be expensive, but there are also some lower end tickets that are very affordable and will have about 34,000 of those tickets that'll be in the $34 range.
The new bid documents also provide details about venues and their planned spectator capacity. Park City Mountain and Deer Valley, which will host a variety of alpine skiing and snowboarding events, are expected to host crowds of 12,000 each. Utah Olympic Park can host 8,000 people for downhill skiing and 15,000 for ski jumping. The capacity for Soldier Hollow, which will host cross-country skiing, is 15,000. The Big Air competition planned for downtown Salt Lake City can accommodate 25,000, according to the bid committee. Most of the tickets for events are standing room only. To move people around for such a large-scale event, organizers were also asked by the International Olympic Committee to provide transportation details. Bid documents state there is an opportunity to explore a bus rapid transit connection between Park City and Salt Lake City. More broadly, it says organizers plan to expand the use of public transit for spectator transportation. This is an important week for Utah's Olympic Bid Committee, which is expecting a final announcement about the 2034 Games next month. On Wednesday in Switzerland, IOC officials will vote whether or not to recommend Salt Lake City's bid for an election in July. If selected, the IOC's executive board will vote in Paris in the days leading up to the Summer Olympics. Salt Lake City officials have requested an election on the final day of the session, July 24th, to coincide with Pioneer Day in Utah. The IOC is widely expected to name Salt Lake City as host, along with the French Alps for 2030. The two contenders are not facing opposition and are the only bids officially recognized by the IOC. To see the full set of documents released by Utah organizers Monday, visit kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
The historic Echo Church is open every Saturday this summer, and all summer we'll be hosting the traveling exhibition, Chugging, Screeching, Rumbling, Billowing, Utah's Industrial Revolution. Local historian Sandra Moore has more details. Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning, Leslie.
So maybe first just start by telling us about the Echo Church. Is it's what, the only historical building left in Echo?
No, actually, there's a number of houses, and then the Echo Community and Historical Organization that owns the church also owns two other historic buildings. One is the original two-room schoolhouse that was built, I think, about 1914. That one we don't have open to the public. It really needs a use. So if anybody's looking for a historic building, give me a call. And then the other historic building that we own is the post office that has been there for, 100 years or more, and has its own zip code even, and been in continuous use. So it's probably the oldest post office, in Summit County, in the original building, So and we have that open. We have our own postal employees. We have a contract with the U.S. Postal Service to keep it open. So, that one's really a step back in time when you go inside. You can buy stamps and mail things.
So the church itself, is it still used as a church on Sundays?
It's non-denominational at this point, because it's owned by a nonprofit, and it is available for rent. We do quite a few weddings because you get to walk down the aisle, and it's just beautiful inside. The setting, below the red rocks is very pretty, and the street is lined by a row of really large trees. So it's just a wonderful place to have a wedding, especially in the summer.
Yeah, but again, no regular church services there.
Nothing regular. So the regular thing we do have is it's open every Saturday from 11 until 4. And so again, people can come visit, free admission. Just so representative, it really hasn't changed, in the it's almost 150 years old, so built in 1876.
Now, you received a grant to keep that open on Saturdays. That grant pays for what?
So we hire somebody. In fact, in Echo, we're pretty much the only employer keeping the town's economy going at this point. There was a gas station and two cafes, but they're all closed at this point. So, we hire locals, just part-time jobs, but every little bit helps, when you're living in a rural community.
All right, so that money then just pays for that person to open and close the church then each Saturday, huh?
Right, yeah, and of course then, the bigger part of the grant, we get a wrap tax grant thanks to the Summit County every year, and actually, more of that money is spent on just keeping the buildings maintained and preserved, and then, of course, towards, bringing in the traveling exhibition, and along with that, we also host a number of programs, typically lectures given by, different subject matter experts.
All right. Well, then tell us about the exhibit that you have. It's on loan for the summer, huh?
Right, yes. And that came from the Utah Division of Arts and Museums, and it was actually a collaboration between that division and the Utah State Historical Society. And so it talks about the Industrial Revolution, in Utah and how machinery replaced human and animal power in the late 19th and early 20th century. So there's, there's just interesting pictures of really early agricultural equipment because that's the most obvious replacement. But, of course, the railroad coming through was a huge part of the Industrial Revolution because not only did it allow for the transportation of people to Utah, but also to take, the goods out of Utah, so not only agricultural products, but
you know, from the mining industries as well. So silver in Park City, but also coal from Coalville and salt from the Great Salt Lake. And so we have great pictures of all those kinds of industries as well, because, you know, they were definitely very mechanized. And there's even pictures of growing sugar beets, which, you know, we've all heard about but don't really know much about, but another industry in Utah, you know, but basically creating sugar. Yeah.
Hmm. So coming up this Saturday, you've got a special guest as part of this exhibit. Tell us about that.
Right. So we have Dr. Chris Merritt, who's actually the director of the division. He's the state historic preservation officer. And he was instrumental in getting the exhibit, the traveling exhibit that we have on loan, put together. And he's actually just spent 2 years excavating the ghost town. It's a railroad town called Terrace, Utah, on the transcontinental line, but a portion of it that is no longer used. And he's going to come and talk to us about Chinese railroad workers and the archaeology and what they've learned. And I think the most exciting part about it is that he encountered and extracted hundreds of artifacts from the site over the past 2 years. And they range from everything from traditional Chinese medicine jars to ancient coins. And he's going to bring some of those with him for us to enjoy. So that will be, yeah, just exciting to see that kind of stuff and, you know that it's, you know, 150 years old from building the Transcontinental Railroad.
Yeah, it sounds like that could be its own exhibit at some point.
Exhibit. Yeah, well, actually, he is anticipating that it's all going to go to the new museum that's being built down by the state capitol, the Museum of Utah. So the state legislature has decided to fund a history museum of Utah. So that's exciting as well.
And anybody familiar with the building of the Transcontinental Railroad or even Park City's history knows how important the Chinese were part of growing Utah.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, they came with the Transcontinental Railroad and then, you know, building it was basically a race. You know, the two companies, the Union Pacific and the Central Pacific were being paid, by miles. So they were trying to build it as fast as they possibly could. So after it was completed, there was a lot of work that needed to be, you know, redone. Tunnels needed to be dug. Buildings needed to, you know, be shored up. And so the Chinese stayed as the railroad workers. And in fact, just, you know, maintaining the railroad ties, all the wooden ties, they had to be replaced every year. That's how much, operations on the railroad and the trains were wearing those railroad ties out. So there, in fact, were a number of Chinese people that lived in Echo and up Echo Canyon, basically repairing the tracks. And interestingly, I was looking at the census records, and by 1900, the railroad gang workers had been replaced by Japanese workers. And I think that had everything to do with the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1880, which, you know, prohibited them from any more Chinese from coming to the United States.
Mm. All right. So Dr. Merritt, again, he'll have a lot more information. He'll be presenting his lecture this Saturday, June 15th, basically when the church closes, but it'll stay open for, what, an extra hour or so?
Right, yeah, and that's worked out well for us. People can come early and see the exhibition about the Industrial Revolution. And then at 4 o'clock, that's when the presentation starts. And so, you know, stay for another hour and there'll be questions afterwards. And of course, hands on.
All right.
Chinese artifacts. Yeah.
And what, do people just sit in the old pews, huh?
Yes, and we sit in the pews. Yeah, so, you know, bring a cushion. They're somewhat hard. I guess it was to keep you awake while you were going to church.
If people would like more information about the church or how to schedule a wedding, you've got your own website?
Yes, so, Facebook page. So just Google, Echo Church on Facebook, and we'll pop right up.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Easiest way to find us? No. And we have a number of other lectures scheduled coming up as well. And I think the big boy is coming through. That's the steam engine that's owned by the Union Pacific. They're busy organizing a big boy trip all the way to California and back. So, go on the Facebook site, and you know, as things get scheduled, we'll be able to post those. And or come by the, when you stop by the church in our guest book, you can leave your email, and if you get on our list, we'll send you updates.
Okay. Sandra Morrison, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, as we've reported, the Christian Center of Park City hired a new executive director as it promotes former director Rob Harder to co-chairman of the board of directors. Rob joins me now in studio, and on the phone with us, we have the new executive director to be, Steve Richardson. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's good to be here in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Steve. Well, Rob, it took a while. It sounds like you had dozens of applicants for the position.
We did. You know, it was quite the process. And as I mentioned before, we had a national search. We got a national firm to help us with that. And I'm really glad we did that because I think that extra investment helped us find Steve. And I think Steve's going to be just a great next person to come in. And it may be surprising, but this is only our third executive director in 24 years. So I think it really speaks to just that longevity and stability of the organization, which I'm very appreciative of. And the board has been fantastic to keep that stability going.
Okay. And Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am I'm currently on active duty in the United States Air Force. I'm a chaplain, a colonel. I've been a part of the military all my life, so I've never had a steady home, never lived anywhere more than 3 years. So I'm excited to finally put up roots somewhere and just be a part of the Park City community.
So what's happening? I mean, active duty, do you have an obligation to finish out a term here?
I do, just for a few more months. So I'm joining on October 1st. I am finally retiring from the Air Force after 25 years.
Oh, congratulations, and thanks for your service. So why was this a job that you wanted?
So I actually was just kind of curious. I wasn't really planning on retiring yet. I still had 5 more years I was planning to do and just happened to be surfing the internet and saw this opportunity and looked in to what they actually do at the Christian Center. And it fascinated me. I love the idea that they were taking care of the whole person, thinking mentally, thinking physically, thinking through all of their different needs and figuring out a way to touch people at their point of need. And I just got really excited about it and decided that's really what I wanted to be a part of. And then I found out it was in Park City. And it sounded amazing.
So you're not going to be here until October 1st, but I think you've been out to Park City kind of looking around, trying to find a place to live?
I have, yes. I've been out twice now just in the interview process, and I'm planning to visit again next month in actual house hunting and try to figure out where I can live, my wife and I.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've got children, but they're grown and headed off to college?
That's correct. My last one just graduated high school on Friday, and so we're excited for him to head out to college, and my other two have already graduated college and out in electrical engineers, different parts of the nation.
All right. Rob, how important is it, I think, to the board that Steve has this Master of Divinity, being a chaplain? Of course, we call this the Christian Center, but it's never been kind of a denominational kind of service.
That's a great question. You know, that's always something people ask me that as well with my background. And I would say we were looking for somebody who could really, number one, just respect where everyone is coming from, regardless of their faith, actually. So I think to me, when you're trained as with a Master of Divinity and you're trained as a spiritual leader, my hope is you're able to then come to people, meet them where they are, and respect whatever faith they have. And so we've always done that, as you know. We've really served the entire community. Our question that we ask people is not what do you believe, but what do you need? We want to meet you at your point of need. That's really what we're about. So that humanitarian service side is really what has driven the organization this far. And so I think the other great thing about Steve is in his role currently and for the last several years, he's worked with people from all different types of faith as a chaplain there in the Air Force. And so that's been a really good experience for him so far. And so I think he'll carry that into this role as well.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, not knowing really what you do, Steve, as a Air Force chaplain, but my guess is that you just spent a lot of your time with people showing some compassion and hope. This is a little bit different job. This is running an organization. So I guess how are you going to meld those things together?
It is different, and yet it's along the same lines of what I do. So I do at this time run an organization. I'm the charge of the chapel community or the chapel program at the an Air Force base. And I've been a part of the National Chaplain Corps as well. And what people don't realize is 80% of the people I work with have no religious background. I have supervised rabbis, I've supervised imams. We work with all different denominations and all different faith groups, but our goal is, in fact, our mission in the Chaplain Corps is to care for people more than anybody thinks possible. And that really resonates with what they do at the Christian Center, is they care for people more than anybody thought was humanly possible. And so even though it's a civilian organization, which I've never been a part of, I'm definitely resonating with their point of care.
All right. So at this point, Rob, are there marching orders for Steve, or are you just kind of waiting for him to come on board?
I like that term, the marching orders. We have to carry that into his role. No, I think really the key has been we already set up some time for him to, we're going to have some Zoom calls kind of between now and October 1. He's also just, it works out, he's going to be out here looking for homes. The same week, we're going to have our all-staff summit where all of our staff come together for a full day. We actually close down the center and all of our campuses so that we can have just a day to grow and develop and have fun as a team. So he'll be able to join us for that. So there'll be a lot of things, just kind of catching up to speed, orientation, preparing him so that when he hits the ground in October 1, he'll really hit the ground running. So that's kind of our goal, is to get him prepared now so that by October 1, we're really ready to roll.
All right. Well, when you look at all of the balls in the air that the Christian Center is juggling here, I mean, of course, you've got the food pantry, you've got the boutique, you've got the Christian Center, you've got places in Heber, and now you're adding another one out at the outlets.
I know. I told him it's such an exciting time to come to the center because we are expanding. This is our fourth location, if you will, if you include our warehouses, just a place where we, you know, put a lot of stuff, you know, 4,000 square feet, thanks to Mountain Trails and our partnership with them. But yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. The outlets are going to open at the end of this month, and that'll be our fourth store, which is really exciting for us. And so I think what I was telling him during the interview process, you know, we're at a stage where we're ready to kind of really go to that next level of scaling this organization. You know, we just crested 80 paid staff now on our team. And so a lot of people are surprised we have that many paid staff. That doesn't include our volunteers and all the wonderful people that serve. But I think that's really at the next level. This store at the outlets is really going to help us expand kind of, I think, our brand and who we are. And as people come up, a lot of people come from Salt Lake to the outlets and maybe don't make their way into town because of traffic maybe, or they're like, well, I'll just stop by. It's real close to the highway. They know what the outlets are. And by getting a taste of our stores, our hope is they learn about our mission. So that's really our hope with the outlets, is to help spread the word about our food pantry, our counseling center, and all the other services we provide.
And I think, is that where you're going to be spending more of your time then, Rob, with the counseling center?
Exactly. That's right. So as soon as Steve comes into his role, then I'll move into the co-chair of the board, first of all. But yes, my time will be moved into coaching and consulting. And one of the big parts of that is really helping to expand our counseling and wellness center. There's been some special initiatives that I know the board has wanted to do for quite some time, but we just didn't have the bandwidth. We didn't have the person who could really put the time into it. So I'm excited about that because, as you know, we've talked many times on the show, the need for mental health continues to expand. And we are just set up really uniquely to be able to provide some unique and different types of services. We'd love to expand that.
So you're going to try and take that kind of off of Steve's plate?
He'll still be in charge, yeah, but he'll have another person he can lean on, you know, to make sure things get done. But he will definitely still be in charge and oversee all of it, yeah, at the end of the day. And the nice thing, by the way, Steve is trained as a counselor, as his wife is, so they both have mental health training, which is wonderful. And that's another draw for us of, I think, why we selected him. Because of his training, his experience, he can tie right into that vision of what we're doing with mental health.
All right, Steve, and what are you kind of working on behind the scenes here as you're making this transition?
So honestly, I'm mostly focused on getting out of the military. If you've ever been a part of the government, it takes a long time and a lot of meetings. I even have the movers coming over our house right now to start packing us up. But I think most of all, I'm just trying to get to know the team, just trying to have personal calls with each person and really getting to know where their heart is, where their love is, where their passion is, where their zeal is, to figure out how I can best help them to become the person they want to be and help them to be able to care in the best, most effective way possible.
Okay. Well, we look forward to meeting you in person, Steve. Good luck with the retirement and the move, and we'll see you here in Park City in October. Rob?
Sounds great. Thank you.
Anything you also want?
No, just thanks, Leslie. We always appreciate your support.